Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
You know how when they yell cut, they wouldn't stop?
That's interesting.
What?
Yeah. If you were Donna, what would you have said?
A waitress rather call the police. And she was mistaken 90210 for
cops.
Along with your host, Charles Rosen.
But look at that Dean Cake. And Dan probably got the best performance he ever gave.
We're having a meeting here?
Oh, at least there's one person on this ricotta set that knows what they're doing.
Larry Mullen.
I had a friend named Craig Richland. There was still cocaine around and stuff. I always remembered him, and I just kind of thought I would honor my coke dealer.
Get out of here!
Pete Ferrero.
Here's what I learned. It's possible Claire would have gone out with me.
That was your takeaway.
So sit back and relax, because it's like totally time for the Beverly Hills 90210 show.
Just hold on to me tonight.
Hello, Larry Mullen. Welcome back to the Beverly Hills 90210 show, our first show of 2024. It's a New Year's show. Happy New Year. And
Happy New Year.
The show itself that we're covering is a New Year's episode. So that's really exciting.
So that's why we're covering it. Yes.
Yes, it makes sense. How was your New Year's? What did you do? This has been a busy holidays. Last time we were all together was the Super Deluxe Christmas party.
Yes, which was a lot of fun. That game show was good. Chuck and who won? Who do you have as a partner?
Caitlin Ryan.
Caitlin Ryan. Yeah, they killed. I mean, we lost. I feel so bad.
They dominated.
New Year's was good. I actually went to a party on the beach out here. And we get fireworks in Marina Del Rey. You get them at 9 o'clock and 12 o'clock. So you get just a double dose of pyrotechnics, which is always gets you going. And then here we are, 2024. Keep going, yay!
It's exciting,
and it's also today, actually, January 4th is Chuck Rosen's birthday.
I was going to mention it's Chuck Rosen's birthday today
in Rosen World, and I know he's celebrating big time with his mishpucha and his beloved grandchildren and his children. And yeah, it should be fun for him. I haven't talked to him. I saw him briefly yesterday, but I know he's looking forward to it. And he's a young man, I want to say. Chuck is a young, young man.
I am so grateful that I got to meet Chuck. I'm sure that you are as well through the years. We'd met at different times for sure, but he has just been so insightful and wonderful and kind to all of us fans. And and he's hilarious too. So there's that as well. Larry, I wanted to point this out. I got to go to the Walsh House this week, and
I saw the pictures on Facebook.
I'm going to show this real quick. It's a small little 38-second video. I went with Purple Nikki and Lynn. Now, do you remember Lynn? We met Lynn up at
She came to the beach house, right?
Yes, she's an incredible person. She got us.
You met the owner of what the outside of the Walsh House.
She walked right up to it.
I followed it on all the social media.
She is amazing.
What was the guy like? Does he like being the owner of the Walsh House?
He loves it. He's going to come on the podcast, Larry. He's doing an episode of the podcast. And I think, remember how we did broadcasts out of the beach house?
Yeah.
I think broadcasts out of the Walsh House is coming soon.
Wow.
Never been done.
Well, obviously the inside is nothing like our set, so it's kind of doesn't really matter.
There are some similar pieces though. I mean? It has similar vibes. I mean, we'll bring on our returning champion a few, and find out if they manipulated it to look a certain, where certain things inspired by the Walsh House and all that stuff. All right, let's get a small ad together. We'll come back and we're going to talk about Turn Back the Clock. We didn't talk about the Ian Ziering thing real quick. Do you want to talk about that?
Briefly, because I'm really we all care about Ian so much, and
I love him like a brother.
Normal pedestrian citizen. He's basically harassed by these people. He goes to stand up for himself and he gets totally attacked. And we know who these people are. I follow them now on Instagram. It's a 605 mini bike gang out of San Gabriel. And they've been posting stuff about it. And we need to out these people, the actual people who did it. But it's the 605 mini bike gang out of San Gabriel, California. They're easy to find. They don't hide around. And you can see them. But I want to know who the people are. We can identify them.
I love Ian Ziering. Like,
they took some shots at him, which were just by the way, these bikes are not legal. And the police just allow it. It's just total baloney.
He looked like Andre the Giant compared to these people. You know what I mean? Or big, sexy Kevin Nash for real, new school wrestling fans.
Okay,
you know?
That was a WWE reference. I did write for Kevin Nash. Right. But yeah, Ian throws a UFC kind of worthy kick at one point. I've gone through the film backwards and forwards to see what I could get. So I really wanted to solve this crime, and I did basically solve it. Now if I know it, the police have to know it, and then we'll see if they do anything.
They have to do something about this. We love Ian too much.
I doubt it very much. Anyway, we love Ian.
Glad that he's okay.
Brian Austin Green called him a beast. Everyone else said, look, he's
big, sexy.
His daughter. I mean, he's got a 12-year-old daughter, for God's sake. Anyway, that's it.
All right. Commercial, and then our returning champ and a fun friend of the show is coming back this week. Good.
Hey, Beverly Hills 90210 fans. Check out all the latest rad stuff from the Beverly Hills 90210 show shop. They have everything you could possibly imagine. So, like, go there now, okay?
Okay. We are back here. And look who's joining us. I got to spend a little time with her today. Molly Campbell is here. Molly, hello.
Hello. Hi, Drew. Happy New Year. Larry,
yeah, we should say that Molly was the wardrobe designer for, I guess, which season did you start, Molly?
I don't know. I think three to eight.
Yeah. But she was all my time I was there. She was my gal.
She gave me some stuff, Larry. I want to show.
We're Canadians.
Look at this.
Exactly.
Larry and I are Canadians.
We were all silent Canadians. Jason was in there too, and there were a lot of guest star Canadians.
And Kathleen. Sure.
Yes, of course.
Hamilton represents. But I was a landed immigrant. I was really an American who then went to Canada.
I was a landed immigrant.
Yeah, I did the 60s twice.
3 years of it. Yeah.
So I met with Molly. She gave me some really cool things. Look at this. A Tiffany Thiessen photo, and it's signed on the back, right?
Oh, my gosh.
She looks so great, Larry. She's been following our stories on Instagram.
Oh, good.
She's gorgeous. She's doing a cooking show on NBC, isn't she?
She is. She has a new cookbook out. Tiffany, you have to come on the podcast.
I know she somehow put herself away from the show, but hopefully she loves the show.
She has to come on the show. We'll talk about the cookbook most of the time and ask a few 90210 questions. Please. It's the amazing cookbook. She's an amazing author. You have to come on this show. Okay, now look at this. Jason Priestley. Ooh. This is the seasons, Larry, that we're covering today.
Yeah,
beautiful. You know? Now, this is my favorite of all of the things. This is a cast photo.
Oh, yeah.
And we shot that in the hottest day of August in Encino, in somebody's yard. Huh. And it was the first time I styled something like a Gap ad.
Wow.
It's very cool. And it's nice to see Jamie and Kathleen in the photo.
Yep.
You know, because they were, I don't know that they were always welcome.
Well, this would be season six then. This would be season six. Or
this photograph?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Season five, maybe.
Larry.
No, I don't think so. Jamie was not a full regular then.
So then this is season six. This is the season that we're covering.
Six before
the guy that played Gabrielle's husband in it too.
Renee says Jesse. If you wrote them in the 90s, they sent you these postcards back. Thank you for that information. Wrote who, Renee? Who wrote who? Okay, Larry, we're and Drew, the returning champion, Drew Kinney is back. You were needed for this episode because I don't know how the Rose Bowl was recreated, and we'll get to that part of this, but I wanted to, Larry and I
Rose,
were.
You mean the Rose Parade, not the Rose Bowl.
Yes, the Rose Parade. And I know that we were, Larry and I were watching this on a watch along because we are back on Patreon for those that were wondering. And we thought it looked incredible, but the way you were able to make that look. Larry, let's start with you. This is a fun and different episode in a way because we're not telling the story forward. We're telling the story backwards, and that's not something that we really see in 90210. So how did that idea come to you?
Well,
because I saw it written by Larry Mullen.
It came out of necessity because don't forget we have this long-running arc of the Rose Queen story, which is going to pay off at the Rose Bowl Parade, which is New Year's. And then normally we could have aired this, like, I guess the week before, but that's such a dead week that I think we were running reruns that week. So we knew we were going to have an air date like January 3rd or 4th. So once I saw that, I said, oh, I want to tell the story of New Year's Eve the way people tell the story of New Year's Eve and just have these different flashbacks and get a chance to kind of wrap up all these stories in a kind of a fun way. And the episode's going to, just like, you know, looking backwards, it's going to air after New Year's. So that worked.
I think it worked out great. You know what I mean? And it's not something that we were used to seeing, but I wanted to show a quick clip. Let me see.
There's over 400.
This is how we're starting out.
Million people tuned into yesterday's broadcast of the Rose Parade.
This is from the actual Rose Parade.
Foreign countries where it was billed as Baywatch with blossoms.
All right. They're removing the Christmas tree.
Goal-oriented, Steve.
It's the last thing we've ever seen in 90210.
I don't know about you. I've had about enough vacation. Oh, look who it is. Hey, baby, I missed you.
Oh, I like this. I'm gone 2 days and I'm ready and waiting. What happened to your eye?
Oh, a little New Year's souvenir. I'm sure he'd be happy to tell you all about it. Actually, Brandon's the one with the story here. He got crunched.
I mean, this is a little bit life imitating art with what happened with Ian.
Yeah, yeah. You know, of course, he only gets hit by a door here, I think.
That's right. Yeah.
But, you know, just looking at that, I mean, we knew, you know, in putting this together, at least in my mind, I knew we had lots of footage. We were going to be able to have, we were going to basically incorporate stock footage of the parade. Yes. And we had, I think we had done a deal with that guy is called Sam Rubin. He was a broadcaster at the time. He might still be alive. I don't know. But he was, you know, everyone knew him. He was the entertainment guy and he was a friend of the show. So I think he's still around, right? Yeah, he had his permission to do that. So we knew we had all this ammunition to be able to pull this off.
Yes. But seeing things like the tree get removed from the house, this is real.
That's what, again, you know, you're thinking about what happens in these things. I mean, that's the day people throw their trees out. This is January 3rd. The holidays are over. Let's get going. And we're exhausted from the holidays. There's a little bit of that feeling. So, you know, that makes it kind of fun.
And it's nice to see Claire. Claire has three.
The other thing is, you know, one of the things the show always tried to do was to show real distinctive LA, Beverly Hills kind of things, you know, and Southern California kind of things, like the whole Rose Parades, the whole Rose Queen story was so unique to this area that, you know, was just really glad that we were able to get all those permissions to be able to do that because it was pretty astounding, really.
Larry, do you watch the Rose Parade in your?
I watched usually like about 10, 15 minutes of it. I enjoy it.
I do too. Did you watch it this year?
Yes, I did.
Okay, I did as well.
What about you, Molly?
I watch it. The best is going over to Pasadena and
seeing the floats
prepared, but the smell of the flowers is what gets me. It's just amazing.
Okay, let's take a look at another scene right off the bat. Larry, I think this is also the first episode that we see.
Oh yeah, the Flying Monkey Boys, the step brothers of Steve Sanders. Yeah, Rush Sanders' other kids.
I'm sure the guy from the Walsh House loved this.
Yeah, we shot Practical that day.
What's up, bro? Why don't you tell me?
You know what? This just says written by me. Doesn't Meredith's not in it.
That's what I'm saying. On IMDb, she gets a credit.
That's good. Okay, I feel better about that. I don't know why. I think on IMDb must have it wrong.
That's horrid. That's heinous. And you wouldn't know anything about it.
Well, I think someone's trying to send you a message, Steve.
Really? What would that message be?
Maybe you ticked a couple guys off or something. Yeah, you know, like maybe they wanted to borrow your Corvette and like you said no.
Why don't you guys get out of my sight?
Cool.
No, wait, you know what? On second thought, I think I'd like to see you stick around and clean up every shred of that stuff. You got 1 hour.
Larry, this is the first time that we see these guys, and you gave Randy Spelling a part.
Yeah. I was, you know, me kind of trying to make the old man happy and like me. Whatever. Yeah, they're terrific in it. You know, like we always had this idea. They had always been mentioned as the Flying Monkey Boys or whatever. And I just said, you know, I just harvested the idea. Again, just try to vertically integrate what we already have and just keep it alive. And these guys did a great job. They came back many times after this. And, you know, they basically represented the other side of Steve. Just when Steve's trying to get more mature, here's two Steves come. Two Steves are bigger than one.
On the Randy Spelling thing, what was it like? What do you remember about going to Aaron and telling him that you wanted to cast Randy in that?
I think he took a talk. I remember he kind of had like a long kind of look and kind of gave a nod. And he was. I think he was glad. Look, you know, it's nice to be able to come home and tell your kid you got a job. I mean, yeah, I think it worked out. We should have asked Diane Young that. I can't remember how the final word came down on that. I mean, certainly he was offered the part. He did not read for the part. And he had already played, I think, in Sunset Beach. Aaron had a soap opera that Randy had a little part in. You know, so we know he wanted to be an actor. So you know,
he's fantastic. And also, so is the kid Travis. We're never going to know.
Yes, he plays Ryan in this. Travis, we've had him on the show.
Austin, yeah. Do you remember casting him?
Yes. Yeah, because he had the goofy face, which was, you know, so moldable. It was all, you know, it's kind of like silly putty. I mean, it was all over the place. So, I mean, we knew he was going to overact, but we thought that would be good because, you know, Randy might not. So it'll, between the two of them, it'll be a good combination.
It really works. Lindy says that Jenny Garth posted that she went to the Rose Parade this year. I saw that. Yes.
It was the most gorgeous day also. Sorry, Drew.
I know. Did you watch it when you were living in LA? Did you watch the Rose Parade?
No, I have a hard time watching parades. When I was a little kid, like until I graduated from high school, I was in a marching group, and I was
in the parade. Yeah.
Yeah. And so watching parades for me is like, oh, those poor people, they're not at the end yet.
Eric brings up that Ryan has the West Beverly t-shirt on and he hadn't noticed that before. So are we to assume that Ryan graduated from West Beverly?
Well, that would be up for grabs if something we could use, but my thing would be he just kind of grabbed Steve's old t-shirt, you know.
Okay. That's kind of more like
I don't think he did because I think they're, you know, we'd have him like grow up maybe in Northern California. It just depends, if you're going to really work that thing in a kind of story slam kind of way. Yeah, they were a lot of fun, those kids. They did a good job.
Drew, I got to go to the Walsh House this week and go inside and met the owner. And it's the same owner, or the family is the same owner. I wanted to ask you, though, well, first of all, we see all that you TP'd the house. How did they react to that, one? And two, what are your memories of working at the Walsh House?
Well, number one, their reaction was, excellent, I got paid.
And cleared the bank.
Yeah, I mean, it's like we'd been to the neighborhood so many times because Luke's house was just down the street and around the corner that like where we put trucks and everything was all negotiated with everybody and worked out. So once we were there, normally we really didn't have any issues because the people loved us because we took care of them and we didn't abuse them. You know, it's like a lot of companies come in and just trash the place. But we weren't those people. So they really liked us.
He says that he paid off his mortgage with this 902.
Wow, I'm sure. Fabulous. We were there all the time.
He revealed the number, Larry, of how much he made through the years with the show. And he'll share that when he comes on. But he did okay with this.
It's amazing. So they've lived there from the 90s.
His father lived there. Uh-huh. And now he has taken it over, but he's an older man. Well, you saw he's an older man.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah. That's fabulous.
Was his dad living there in the 90s?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I think he was too.
Yeah. And you know what's funny? It's like, when I saw your video, I thought, God, he looks familiar. Was it the dad or the son that I'm thinking about? I don't know.
But did you ever have it out with those guys about anything, Drew?
Well, you know, I mean, there were some moments I was trying to think of this earlier because there's one great example and I just like chapped Paul's ass. Oh, he was so mad. We were coming out and we'd scouted the place and we were doing something we needed a shot of the front lawn and he decided it was time to add these big boulders in the front lawn but not by the driveway, across the lawn. And so he drove a bobcat across the middle of the lawn and put these boulders up on the other side. So there was just like two great big turf marks that we had to come out and like, you know, put sod down and everything. Oh, Paul was so mad, but he was like, well, I got new grass.
Because I remember we played football out there. Steve Young came out there, obviously, and threw some footballs.
Yeah, I mean, you guys did. I mean, I think they used it all the way to the end of the show. Like, there were times when they used the exterior of the wall shot. It got less and less through the years, but for sure they would go back.
Well, as long as they were – well, don't forget, with California University wasn't that far away either. You could probably I wanted to ask Drew and Molly if you remember. Was Turn Back the Clock a double up, you think?
The episode.
It could have been. There weren't a lot of moves, and you know, like one of them, the apartment that was in Santa Monica on Main Street, because I remember putting the sign in, and we had to have something else to match the day, but there's nothing else really that would match as much as we needed for an establishment.
Yeah, we weren't at California University. So yeah, I mean, I think it was too, because it's very compartmentalized also, the way people are in small groups for the most part, other than the last thing at the end.
Absolutely.
Let's look at this.
The director was a guy named Graham Lynch, who I have not a fond memory of. I remember
him at all.
He was a Canadian.
He was a young guy. He really hadn't done very much, and the older crew members did not like him.
I didn't
because like they were
it.
Like,
I must have picked it up.
I would be one of those.
See, and I mean, for me, I was pretty close in age to him, so I didn't really see the age difference thing, but I saw the attitude, like Blake, you know.
I don't think the actors liked him either because he never asked back. But looking at it now, he did a pretty good job. I mean, there's lots of good footage there. I'm pretty happy with the performances. So,
okay, let me ask you this, though, Larry. How does a guy like this get a job like this? I mean, this is a big friggin' show at this point.
Came through Paul. Paul was the gatekeeper.
Didn't he do
some? Molly says good agent.
I think
good agent who Paul had a relationship with, and Paul liked to give people chances. I mean,
what was that, true?
I think he did some music videos or something that somebody knows. I remember there was talk about that. Like, that was the talk with a lot of the crew. Like, how did this guy end up here? Oh, yeah.
Still talking about it all these years later. We're still wondering. Yes. But so, Larry, what did you, at that time, what was your issue? Was it
with him?
Yeah.
It must have been a coverage issue during the shoot that I was unhappy with or... You know, but looking at it now, like I said, it all kind of came together. But I had some other expectations, and I just working with him, it just wasn't that pleasant, I guess. You know, it was just usually, you know, you meet with the director, you have a tone meeting with him, you're sitting with him through the casting situation, and then you've got production. I'm looking at basically daily. So at that point, I'm not seeing him at all because I'm not going to the set, and that's about it. You know, but I guess the word was coming in that really he wasn't really you know, people really weren't liking him, whatever reason. The perception was bad.
You also mentioned, Larry, that there was a movie that influenced this.
Well, Memento is always, you know, telling a story backwards. You know, you always want to do something like that, but it's a classic form and it's a challenge. It's, you know, I like puzzles. So yeah, it's a puzzle to script this and to lay out the story on it and make it work. And, you know, again, we were paying off the bird too from Christmas.
Speaking of that, let me show a Claire scene here. Claire does not like the bird.
Come in. Hi.
Hey.
Any chance we can cover the bird cage or put a muzzle on her or something?
That's me.
She's not that loud.
Compared to what? A jackhammer?
Claire, look, I'm sorry, but Joe's just fixing the cage and then she'll settle down.
Why? What's wrong with the cage?
The ride she's passed. So it'd be very helpful if you and Kelly made sure that no one opened it.
Yeah, sure. Wouldn't want the little birdie to fly away, would we?
This is a personal story for me when my parakeet flew away. So that was
tell that. You told that on the Patreon. Tell that story.
Did I? No, just,
I love this. What happened?
You know, we had a parakeet growing up. They were very big things. So I was probably like about 10 or 11 or maybe 12. And it used to fly around the house when I'd let it out. And someone, my little brother Fred, who was the composer of the show, opened the door up. And the bird flew out, went up the tree. And now we knew where it was, but my dad wouldn't let me climb the tree. I said, my dad hated the bird. So I knew it was not going to work out. If my dad went up there, the bird was going to fly away. And that's what happened.
I really wanted Jerry Frizzell. I invited him to come on to the editor of this episode.
Oh, it would have been great, yeah.
Because I wanted to know who the voice of the bird was. But you believe that it's you.
It could be me, yeah. I could have done it in post.
I feel like it sounds like something you would do.
I've done animation before, so I've been voices before.
Molly, let's talk about Claire in this episode because she looks so good. There's three different looks. I wanted to point this out. And here's one. This is the first Claire look that we see. Then there was the one in the flashback where she's wearing this robe. Do you remember like where she got the robe?
I bought it downtown.
It's the real thing. Where did I buy it? Silk Road.
Wait, what's that, Molly?
I'm sure I bought it in Chinatown downtown.
Yes.
But Kathleen was always very, you know, strong on her feelings about her clothes.
Well, she liked this one, though, definitely. Because, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
and then look at her hair. It's so light.
Yes. Deadhead. Yes, this is a good hair episode for Kathleen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then even in the scene where they wake up hearing the bird, I'm a huge fan of all of this.
Yeah.
All right, Drew.
Well, she's a great favorite of ours, our Kathleen. She's from Hamilton too.
I'm a huge fan. I don't know if there.
I think we got that, Mr. Pete.
Yeah. Wait a second. Are you from Hamilton, Molly? Are you implying that you're from Hamilton?
Kitchener, Ontario.
Well, that's not Hamilton. That's like Amish country. That's Amish country. I think.
But you did have in common with Kathleen when she came on the show. You guys connected based on the fact that you were both in that same area, right? Yeah,
we
she told me.
She
loves you. She absolutely loves you. Like, I mean,
I love her too. And I met her parents, and they came to my birthday party that we had.
Wow.
I
knew
that. Yeah, very special people.
She is a very special person. Okay, Drew, do you have a Kathleen memory that you want? I'm just kidding.
Well, no, actually, it's funny because I sent you that Facebook memory that popped up for me today.
Yeah.
Do you know what that was?
No, tell everybody what that was.
Okay, so what popped up today was the episode where her character was introduced was a scene with her and David at California University where he says, "Hey, cool morph," because they're in a computer lab. And I did a test with a Polaroid of me and my puppy and to just see if this morphing software would work. And the So it's funny because Pete asked me to come here to talk about this, and I just watched the episode, and then the memory shows up, and it's the memory of the Polaroid of my puppy, Peggy.
Oh.
It was a 90210 dog that I got from there. So like it all wraps back around with Kathleen and everything else.
That's amazing. Yes. Yeah. I'm sorry I didn't pull that picture. That would have been good to have. All right, Drew, tell us about recreating the Rose Parade.
Yeah.
You sure you want to be disappointed?
I don't know. I mean, how?
Do you have a clip up?
I have a clip of it. I don't know which one it is. Let's see. This says Donna, so I'm just going to assume that this is it. Let's see. Yes. Okay, hold up. I'll go back.
Yeah, go back a little bit.
Yeah, you want to see the wide shot.
Okay, yeah. So that building, that's the production office. That's the stages.
Wow. So we're on the street. We're on
Calvert. Yeah, we're literally right in front of the production office on Calvert.
Wow, I didn't even know that.
That is the window that side was the production office and stage one, and one side the next second over was where the art department and the extras holding and stage two, stage three, and the swing set space. And those windows right behind Donna's left ear, that might have been, Larry, one of the writer's office windows.
Well, I think it's Paul's office, maybe.
Yeah, no, Paul's office is further down.
Yeah, it would have been one of the writer's offices.
Because where
Betty sat, maybe.
Yeah, because basically we didn't do very much, honestly. There's this little piece of mock-up float because you couldn't shoot very wide because we really couldn't spend a lot of money.
You didn't have a float.
Yeah, so we basically had there's a section of grandstands that we had installed on Calvert Street that blocked the entrances to the couple of parking spaces. People were a little angry they couldn't get into their space. I didn't block mine though, of course.
So this is grandstands. This is grandstands that you created
on Calvert Street.
On Calvert Street.
Yeah, we had a company come in and install grandstands, and it's like 160 feet of grandstands or something. So it's not very much. And there's also a curtain wall behind part of it.
There it is. There's the curtain wall. Yeah.
And then we could take the curtain wall down. So the other part you see is the same part. The curtain is just there for this one and not there for the other one. So it's the same little section because you can't get any wider than this. Like literally when she's on the float, because you have the depth of the background, it has to be this tight. If it's any wider, you're off the off the curtains or off the grandstand somewhere. And we didn't do CGI stuff back then.
No.
So it was a dead hole if you did it that way. And so everything else was just little punch-in inserts, like them sitting there, you know, in the crowd, or him doing flipping the sign in front of the curtain.
I don't know why you said we would be disappointed by that information. All of that information was so fascinating. It's amazing.
See, when I look at it, I go, you know, it's like nothing. I kind of expect everybody wants to hear like, oh my God, you know, we rolled out 600 columns and, you know, it's like all the prep, it took us months and we're like, and it was an afternoon and some guys put up some bleachers and we put up some curtains and we stuck a thing with a ramp and some seats on it in front of it.
But such a smart.
We had to know the footage. You had to know the footage we had. We had a certain amount of footage. And so that was the key, the prep on it.
Oh, yeah. Matching stuff is fun. That was one of the funnest things about 90210 was trying to match existing things or fit into
like the high speed chase. The high speed chase.
Yeah.
What happened?
Molly, what about coming up with Donna's dress? I'll pull that clip again and you can talk to me about the
Rose Queen dress,
the Rose Parade dress and how you
we had to be able to get multiples of the dress because there was not just Donna but
mm-hmm.
I don't know.
There's another actress that was there as well. Yeah.
No. Yeah, she wasn't a princess, so.
That's right.
But the thing that was most outstanding for me was the friendliness of the people from the actual Rose Parade. They were just spectacular. They led us into the, there's a mansion on somewhere on.
Yeah, it's called it's Tournament House.
Yeah.
That's right. Anyway, it was fantastic. And the people there were wonderful. And I got to see all the crowns. And these dresses were always supplied by one of the big department stores. And this year it was Nordstrom. So all of these dresses came from Nordstrom. And there were at least half a dozen. And to make the sleeves puffy and round like that, we stuffed them with plastic cloth bags.
Plastic what bags?
Stuff that they wrap your cleaning in.
Oh, wow.
Dry cleaning.
Bags, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Bags.
Catherine West says Tori looks amazing. I agree. I mean,
she totally does, but she was so fun to dress. I mean, really, she was tiny and she had so much disposable income. It was hard to imagine her. I mean, I remember a Balenciaga gown in navy blue chiffon and lace, hanging on the back of her dressing room door for about 4 months with a price tag on it in high four figures.
Everybody was doing great at 90210. I love it. I love hearing that. Larry, Jessica Klein was who got the Rose Parade.
Jessica did a lot of the Rose Parade wrangling. Once we set on the idea as a major story arc that was going to run through the first, through the first sweeps period, actually through the first part of the year. And then Jessica did all the stuff with the Rose people there and did a great job. And like Molly said, they really were happy to do it. And
they were wonderful.
It really showed the world, what that process was like. And we used it to kind of really challenge the Donna and Felice Martin relationship and also to complicate other things, we touched on all kinds of stuff with it.
The musical act is the Coors.
Ooh, the Coors.
Well, the party at the After Dark sure started out great.
Larry, how did you find? I'm going to mute this before YouTube has a total meltdown. How did you find the Coors?
I liked them. It was a band I liked, and I think periodically I would meet with Ken Buller and tell him what a musical acts would be kind of fun if they're going to be around in LA, if there was a way we could work it out, and the Coors came up, and I just thought it had the right tone for for New Year's. I knew they were going, and they had agreed to do Auld Lang Syne because it was kind of close to them anyway. It was part of their heritage, and it just had the right tone for that kind of evening for a New Year's Eve party.
I mean, I think they even did the New Year's Eve song.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They did. But Forgiven Not Forgotten was their hit at the time. It was kind of they were in rotation on MTV. They were a regular band because don't forget MTV was still going pretty strong then. It wasn't over in any way.
It wasn't reality.
The Peach Pit After Dark looks great for the New Year's Eve party too. It really shot really well at like everything that Tom wanted to do worked beautifully in that particular situation. And you really covered it well. Hey, matter of fact, do you know that the that behind the band, that's a giant peach.
Yeah.
And that like we could light it with different things behind. I was thinking about all the different colors and things over the time.
Yeah,
like,
I hadn't thought about how useful it was.
Absolutely.
Somebody wants to drop in and say Happy New Year. Here's our friend Munch.
Oh my God, Ryan, we miss you, man. What's going on?
Hey, what's up, everybody?
Wow.
Hey there, man.
Molly.
I have good not to seen see you for you, years, man. And I love you. I just wanted to let you know that.
I love you too.
It's good. It's good to see you, Ryan. How's everything going? Well, cheers, by the way. You're almost married a year now.
Yep. Yep. Super Bowl Sunday will be the anniversary. And woo! We're actually going back down to Vegas in March to go watch a Kraken game. That should be fun.
Oh, that'll be fun.
Should we all come?
Go ahead. Please. We'll do it again, dude. Yeah,
right. The sequel? Yes.
And I'm going on my first cruise ever in January. Well, this month. Just we're leaving on the 12th, I think.
A music cruise or what is it?
It's a just a cruise to Mexico.
Oh, no theme. Okay.
Yeah. I do suggest that you bring that that thing for your head. The drinks.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, the Cabo thing.
The Cabo thing. It feels perfect for a cruise.
Yeah.
It's like you will be the life of the party. Tequila
shots. Dude, I could probably get a job on a cruise line just walking around with that backpack and just shooting everybody up, stunning awesome. And whatnot.
Yes.
I need to do.
Where does it go? So
we're stopping in Mazatlan, Puerto Vallarta, and Cabo San Lucas.
Oh, that's a really going to be an amazing.
Where's it going from? From down here?
Yeah, I think San Pedro.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Will you be around for a day or so that we can all have a lunch?
Yeah, really. That's
awesome. Let me see. Hey, Mom. my mom's gonna go on the cruise with me as well as my wife and
amazing.
My mom's best friend, so it's gonna be fun. The cruise, do we when we show up in LA, do we stay a night or
we go right out?
That's
all right. Yeah. Hey Drew, do you ever look at those music cruises like the Grateful Dead cruise or some of the other kind of cruises, these theme cruises? Do you think about going on them?
I look at them and I think no.
Hey, Drew, I wanted to ask you though, when the band like The Corrs comes on, that's got to be really cool. You're a music head. I don't know if you were into vinyl at that time, but you probably were, I imagine. You found The Flaming Lips for Larry. We've learned that here. What was it like to see some of these bands come through, especially like The Corrs?
Oh, I mean, it was really fun because, you know, we had cachet, so we got people. And you never knew who was going to come up next. You know, I mean, Luther Vandross.
Yeah.
Brian Setzer and his orchestra. It's like there's lots of everybody wanted to be there. I mean, Christina Aguilera, you know, they all wanted to be there. And that was pretty cool to get associated with all of that. You know, I really enjoyed that. It was fun.
Ryan shared a story here about the Christina Aguilera. This is beyond your time, Larry, but that Vincent Young couldn't get her name right. He couldn't roll the R correct. Do you have a memory of that at all, Drew?
No, I don't.
Okay.
It's okay.
Yeah, it's okay. Well, Ryan, it was good seeing you, man. Thank you so much for being here. Do you have any memory? I don't think you were around for this episode that we're covering, Turn Back the Clock.
No, because school was out. You know, it was in between the semesters. But we assume that months went back to his family, wherever that was. We never really established. Probably Montebello.
Non-Tustin.
Dustin, yeah.
All right, Ryan, good seeing you, my man. We'll see you around soon, okay, bud?
Yeah, the Munces are from Koreatown.
Oh, okay. All right, represent. Yeah, there you go.
Have a good one, my man.
Love you guys. Take
care.
Love
you, man. Bye-bye. All right, bye.
Good, man.
Chance wants to know if the earthquake pinball machine is still in the Walsh house. The answer to that question is no. But Larry, I think I can find out where it was. I have just recently been in touch with someone who handled the auction when 90210 was wrapping up. And he has all of the information as to what happened to the different items that were there. And he has some stuff. So that's a future podcast episode. Let's look at another scene.
Club, they crossed way over the line.
I pulled this scene, Larry, because a lot of things happen. It's two really amazing things happen back to back from one another.
Oh my God. Shaving cream, my car!
Who?
That festering boils on my butt, Austin and Ryan? I'm gonna kill them. Ow! Oh,
oh. Are you okay?
Son of a...
Holy, this is dirt on my butt.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year! I said Happy New Year.
I love a high Happy column. Happy New Year.
Whoa! There's a piece of work. Who is the artist? You see this?
Oh, Colin, I told you, you're not driving.
I'm not driving. You're driving me.
You're loaded. Come on.
Oh, man. Really great writing there, Larry. Happy New Year into the Happy New Year. Yes. Molly, what's going on? No? Okay.
It's a dinner podcast.
Yes. What did you, Steve getting his car.
Shaving cream. Yeah. You know, shaving cream, you know, just juvenile things, you know.
Yeah.
The fester for him.
I don't know. What is this? Head examined. What is this? Why would I pull this? Let's see what this.
Searching the cars. Will you get rid of it?
I don't have anything. I did it all.
You're sure?
Of course I'm sure.
Yeah, this is sobriety checkpoint for this week's party in LA, then.
Good evening, ma'am. Happy New Year.
Same to you, officer.
Have you been drinking?
No, I'm the designated driver, and I'm with a very talented but inebriated artist on board. I'm just trying to deposit him safely at home.
All right. Have a nice evening. Drive carefully.
Thank you.
What an idiot.
What?
My stash was in your ashtray the whole time.
You're sick. You know what? You need your head examined.
Still trying to get Jason Wiles on this show. It's just not going well. I texted him earlier to try to get him to surprise today. He didn't even respond to it. Didn't even respond to it, Larry.
I don't know. When I'm thinking about it, when we did America's Zip Code, he kind of did a thing for us.
What he feels like. Enough. That was enough.
That was enough. But he hasn't even talked about his character. We all love his character. You know, he served the show beautifully.
I wanted to also point out that Michael Cutlitz is following along here on Instagram. Hello, Michael. I wanted to say hi.
Oh, man.
Oh, hi, Michael.
Yep. Renee says that she loves Val's look here with the red dress and the red lip. It was awesome. Larry, that scene that we just watched of him hiding his stash and all of that, was that based on any thing?
Well, of course. Of course, we've all had things like that. I mean, for me, it was like, on the mat, on the mat, I had some stuff. It was just pot. But I remember the cop came in and he figured he was looking under the mat. It was like hiding in plain sight. He pulled the mat out and the pot went flying out the door. It was an RCMP guy, Molly, who didn't bust me. And if you remember the actor Jim Burns, remember this actor who did, he was a Vancouver actor, Jim Burns, very good actor, who lost his legs. But before he lost his legs, he was in a rock group called God and I. And I was transporting him to a gig doing some roadie stuff, and their stash was on the
Michael says, hi, Molly. I wanted to make sure, and he gave you a little rose. So that
Michael
Cutlitz. Yeah, he's on. I saw him on Instagram, and he did that. So, I wanted to acknowledge that. But also, Molly, Tiffany's look here is incredible. Renee pointed that out in the comments section. What was Tiffany like to dress? She seems wonderful. I mean, the look is incredible. The red dress, the red lips.
She was wonderful to dress. She had a nice figure. She wasn't insecure. There's a big difference between those who are happy with themselves. Most people have something that they hate about their body, or even the finest backs that I've sipped up, like Raquel Welch, they all have something they don't like.
That's incredible. I mean, and Tiffany looks fantastic.
But she's wonderful.
Cutlets. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Cutlets. He says, "Happy New Year! Happy New Year! We'll see you all later in the new year. So be well." That was his comment to you.
I just wanted
to share that. Yeah. Eric Parsons says, "Tiffany should come on the podcast. She did a really good job, and she should take her victory lap."
We need to get Tom Fichter and Gary Antista on.
So Tom's been here. We would love Gary on here. I've tried to get Gary. For fans that don't know, Gary was the person that did all the props.
I know.
And he's responsible for a lot of iconic things that happened here. So I don't know why he won't do it. Drew, are you connected with Gary?
No, he's just grumpy. he's busy being a grandfather.
Yeah.
He would be so good to have here, though.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Gary's awesome.
Well, we want to get Drew out here.
You know, we should probably try to get Ken Stringer on. Ken Stringer would know a lot of stuff, too.
Yes.
Oh, Ken. Bless his heart.
Love Ken.
I was in Canada, and I was watching reruns of Dynasty.
That sounds amazing.
That's an experience. Anyway.
Larry, did you watch much Dynasty?
Was Ken Stringer on the show? Was he an AD on
the show? Yes. Mm-hmm.
No, I never watched Dynasty. Yeah, no, he was an important guy. He was also what was called the scheduling czar for the double ups.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yep. Oh, that would be fantastic to have just to discuss.
You know, just to understand what that meant. He had to balance the shooting days between the two shows.
He was really like a real puzzle. He was the only one
on what set.
I do feel like we've talked to him about coming on. And he was open to it, so I'll revisit that.
He also was a writer on the show. He wrote a number of episodes. Also,
he did. Yes, I remember all the way to the end of the show too. Yeah,
I remember his first one. He was so excited about.
I remember it. It was about the production meeting.
The production meeting to do the read through. I remember he was just beaming because it was his script.
Yeah, because he crossed over. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he became a writer after that. I really don't know what happened to him, but. He certainly did some nice stuff for us. He knew it and had a good way, and he handed in good drafts.
Mm-hmm. I think there was an incident in his life that took him out of the.
I think he lost a loved one. I think you're right.
Didn't he lose his wife in anesthesia or dental?
That is what happened. It was a tragedy. Yeah, it was a tragedy.
Something like that.
Yep. Okay, Larry. The other thing to talk about is all of this.
Seeing you again, but you're all right, man.
Thanks. But you might not think so after I tell you the real reason I'm here.
Not the music?
I'm in love with her, Brandon. And I've been with enough women to know Susan's the one I want.
Then why'd you break up with her in the first place?
Susan didn't tell you?
No, not really.
Well, I'm not surprised. It was very personal.
I see. Performance problems?
That's funny. But I'll tell you right now, there is a bond between Susan and me that no one could ever come between.
And I'm supposed to?
I don't care what you do, Walsh. You're irrelevant.
Tell you what I'm going to do for you, Jonathan. I'm going to chalk this whole conversation up to jet lag. All right, big guy?
Okay, enough talk. Who wants to dance?
And we even get Brandon to dance.
Yeah. Again, you know, it's working the triangle, you know, in the writing, it's working the triangle. And it gave Brandon a great adversary who just kind of really has him twisted in the wind over this girl. I mean, even if he doesn't want the girl, he wants her now just so this guy doesn't have her. And it's just the guy, Carl T. Evans, who plays Jonathan Caston, named after a buddy of mine. Really does a great job. He's just I think he's been the best adversary Brandon ever had, frankly, because this guy just really gets under his skin. You can just see Jason as an actor just twisting the wind. He's not happy at all.
He does a really lovely job. Here's another scene I wanted to show, Larry, from that same sequence.
Well, I gotta get a move on, so happy new year, Suze.
Happiest to you too.
Jonathan, don't.
What?
Hey, hey. That's it.
What's it?
Brandon, please, it's all right.
No, it's not all right.
Can we please just swap this?
Well, I'd like to, but, I don't think Walsh wants to.
Is that an invitation, Junior? Because we could always go outside and I could drop you.
Brandon, please?
Yeah, spoken like a hockey player.
Good night. I'm sorry I caused you so much trouble.
What a crazy scene. He's kissing her right in front of him.
You know, again, good triangle stuff. You know, Brandon had a hard time this year romantically because he also gets dumped terribly at the end of the season. But you know, in hearing it again, we also seeded up this whole thing about what the secret was between them, and what it was you know, she'd had an abortion. They conceived and she had, you know, terminated the pregnancy. And so that was a big deal. And it shows up in a later episode, a pretty good one. And yeah, again, you just keep, you know, stacking those storylines, you know, keep having content, trying to do 32 episodes. You got to keep turning the wheel. And, yeah, but I love the performance there. I just love seeing Jason really, you know, having to eat it a little bit. And then, of course, he's a Canadian hockey player, or even a Minnesota hockey player. So he's been around fights. So I'm totally believable when he says that.
Lindy says that she finds it hard to believe that Jonathan has been with this many women. anyway, the other thing that happens, and I didn't pull this clip, and people are saying don't play any more clips for some reason. I guess YouTube is being funny, or Facebook. Is that Steve does let the kids off the hook with not reporting to his dad that they had been acting up.
Yeah, like, you know, again, it gives Steve a full arc because really he realized that they were no different than he was, and he basically gives him he lets him off the hook. Russ calls, and he's, you know, about to burn them, and everyone's watching him, and he kind of melts. He just says, screw it, you know, let him go.
Steve Sanders is the nicest guy in the world. Yeah. All right. I think, Molly, it's good to see you and to have you back in L.A. I know you were in Canada.
Thank you very much. I'm going to say good night.
Good night, Molly.
Good night, Molly. Love to see you. Happy New Year.
Come back and join us.
Drew, you better come out here and see this final.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
And, Larry, I want to pitch that show for Port Carling.
Port Carling. Wow. That's hilarious. Okay, I'm up for it. You know, I'm looking for work now. I've decided I've got to come out.
That's amazing.
We'll talk. Thanks, Peter.
It's good to see you today. Thank you for all the fun gifts and whatnot. And we'll be back over there soon. Yeah.
Great.
All right. See you soon, Molly. Yep.
Bye-bye.
And for you, Drew and Larry, how do you think this episode holds up? We never see another New Year's episode again. But I loved this concept.
I think, you know, it delivers on a lot of different storylines, and it has some really cool scenes in it. And we pull off the parade thing. It's just, you know, again, it's such a small, you know, compared to the budgets of today, what we pulled off, you know, and doing 32 hours a year is just astounding. You know, I don't know how we did it.
Especially realizing that this is most likely a double ups episode and still being able to pull that off while doing, you know, multiple simultaneously. Absolutely,
And Larry, the result of this episode is how many people approximately do you think watched this episode?
Probably 15 million, 13 to 15 million.
That's an incredible number considering what audiences are like.
That was kind of what it averaged that season, you know, 13 to 15.
Yeah.
You know, I think it went down sometimes. You know, the episode, of course, I always hated was the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, which they made us air. And then that got like a 9 million this year, which they go, why is it so low? I go, yeah, because people are traveling. Our kids are coming home from school.
Drew, did you go to the Stones show?
No, I walked on the stage before the show.
Yeah.
And we scouted it. I did my little Mick Jagger dance for Dave.
That's amazing. Do you have a picture somewhere of you on this stage?
You know, I'll bet that I do. Cause the
you
one
had thing to
I,
have,
well, the one thing I have somewhere is I have a box of negatives from Tech Scouts.
Oh, gotcha.
I have no idea what's in there. I mean, and it's just like roll after roll after roll after roll of Tech Scout negatives.
Yeah, that would, Drew, that would be a one. We should do a Tech Scout negative show one day.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, you got to develop them. It's hard to do.
Yeah, that would be fun to see. Tell people what a Tech Scout is.
So you know what you're going to do. You've talked about the episode. Like you do a read-through with everybody, and you go through the script line by line with everybody in their departments. You talk about everything that you're going to do, and then you get together with all the key people in the departments, and you go visit all of the locations. And you talk about all the logistics, where the truck's going to go, where's the cable going to go. We're going to put this in here. You can't go in here because we're going to block this. You can't go over here. Don't use the bathroom in this part of the house because there's bad plumbing there. And some directors never listen to that anyway. And it's funny. I was thinking about Tech Scouts the other day, and it's like it pops up every now and then. And I always think about it, and I think, oh, my mom would still think it was cool because she did back then. Is that on a Tech Scout, we all had to use the bathroom. We were out in Malibu, so Anson Williams took us to his house to use the bathroom.
Oh, that is so cool.
And my mom thought that was the coolest thing ever.
No, your mom's right. That is that is the coolest thing.
Wait, you got to use the bathroom in Posse's house?
On Happy Days, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We tried to get him on here, too, because he's directed a bunch of episodes, but he hasn't responded to that, so who knows. If he's on Instagram, everybody attack his account. I don't know. Brian says, great writing, like always on this episode, Larry Mullen. It was a unique episode, being it was a New Year's theme. So
thanks, Brian.
All right. I feel like we've covered it. I think Chuck will be back next week. I don't remember what we agreed to all talk about. Do you? Mm-hmm. I feel like it's a pig is a boy.
Oh, yeah. Pig is a dog. Yeah. Brenda gets arrested.
I feel like that's where we're going.
Pig is a boy is a dog. Campus activism.
Yes, and I know we sort of covered it briefly on a different episode, but we're going to really dive deep. By the way, Larry, someone told me earlier this episode is not available. This one that we watched today, Turn Back the Clock, and also the episode that we're going to cover next week, both not on anywhere. I don't think you can get them on Paramount.
Well, I mean, they have to do the right thing. We have to just keep the pressure on Paramount Plus, you know, to not deny the fans the chance to watch the show. It's just
my guess is that the reason why this is not on is for two reasons. The chorus, and then also maybe the Rose Parade.
No, nothing to do with that. No, but again, it just means that they're too lazy and too cheap, because all you have to do is call up the music club and say, hey, we want to have another round of rights on it. You know, they got to say what the price is, and you got to say negotiate, and you got to get a fair deal.
You don't think the Corrs would love to have this?
Of course they would. They don't control their publishing, probably. Probably, you know, some of them can't imagine
being a young fan or a fan that wants to binge 90210 on one of the streaming platforms. You've heard so much about this classic 90s show, and there's, I don't know how many episodes, a lot of episodes.
I counted it for somebody, 59. I think there's 59
of the episodes. In 10 seasons, you can't watch. It's outrageous.
There's just a pivotal one, you know.
Yes.
You know, Scott gets killed.
You can't see it.
Oh, my God. I just saw this, Drew. Chuck and I picked out his favorite scenes. He didn't pick out your specifically, but the whole setup on that episode of them tracking the band and all that stuff and then – they're tracking you for a minute too.
Yeah.
Maybe one day I can convince Chuck to do a full throttle deep dive and bring you on that episode to talk about that scene. All right, guys, this has been great. Another great episode. We will see everybody back here next week. Don't forget, there's more content. If you get tired and you're like, I want more 90210 content of this show, you can go to patreon.com/Beverly Hills 90210 show. Larry and I are going to record something this weekend. I've just made that up, but we're supposed to. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. There's a good t-shirt Molly mentioned. You know, you could have a little, you know, in the writer's room, it was just on a piece of paper in pencil. It said, kissing is good. That's a good t-shirt from the writer's
room. And maybe a picture of some great kisses.
Yeah, sure.
Sure, right.
Absolutely. Like Dylan and Brendan.
Definitely.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much, Drew, for being here again. We will see you all very soon.
Good to see you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.